I don't know. I might have been. I haven't checked for a while. Go.
All right. Can everyone hear me okay? All right. Let's get started. So we're talking. This session is about extensibility points in Team Foundation Server. We're not going to talk about all the extensibility points. Obviously, we're going to focus on the areas of process, work item linking, traceability, and reporting. Those are the areas we're going to focus on. To get started, I'll introduce myself. My name is Greg Boer. I am a PM in the product team and Team Foundation Server. I focus specifically on work item tracking and all that that entails.
And I'm Aaron Bjork. You guys probably can't hear me.
How's that? Aaron Bjork, PM for the process team. So our team's responsible for all the out-of-the-box process templates that ship with TFS, and as well all the reporting scenarios. So if you don't like work item tracking, you can blame Greg. And if you don't like the implementation of work item tracking, you can blame me. That's the way I like to look at it.
There we go. All right. And I realize you probably don't care much about who we are until after the presentation, so let's get started. So the first thing we would like to talk about is, what is Team Foundation Server? Every once in a while, we do these presentations. We find some people are not as familiar with Team Foundation Server as other people. So I would like to have a show of hands. How many people consider themselves well-versed in Team Foundation Server? Okay, good. A lot of smart people in the room. What about people who feel that they're fairly new to Team Foundation Server? Anybody there? Okay. Of people who raised their hands the first time, anyone want to offer an answer to the question of what is Team Foundation Server? If you raised your hand the first time, anybody? Go ahead.
I guess you could say it's a central set of repositories for both source code, work items, basically your ability to track work items, and reporting against those. So I guess in terms of the overall ALM process, it's the fundamental piece that allows teams to work together in a central repository and report against that, as opposed to the previous models where you had project managers or working across multiple files on either SharePoint sites and very little ability to update or track items. So it's basically it's your ability to create an ecology within a project to be able to report against progress, status, and reality, basically.
All right. That's good. So we have a
hire that guy. I like that. That was great.
Yeah. I will write that one down.
We got a little treat too. So we got extra breakfast up here. So thank you for volunteering.
Right. Anybody else want to add to the definition? Anybody else felt like, hey, I have something else to add to that? Who raised your hand first? There's candy. Yes.
But this is just individual. It's everything that gets in the way of a developer actually writing code.
I'm hanging on to my candy bar for that one. So yeah.
Yeah, all right. That's good. That's good.
We got another right here.
Yeah, right?
Well, there's the automated build component, and there's the SharePoint component for team project sharing of information and alerts and all that sort of thing that comes with it as well.
Okay, so he's adding to it that there's automated builds built into Team Foundation Server. There's a SharePoint portal, a website that the team can share, and then also eventing on things that happen within that repository that was referred to by you. That's good. Any other additions? Okay.
It actually allows the team to track the SDLC process from the beginning design to end build. And it allows the managers to have on-time reports regarding tasking, workflow management, a number of other productivity things in there. But the primary thing is that it allows them to trail for all activities.
Okay. So there's the SDLC, which it's, it kind of goes to everything that keeps people from coding or helps them code, we'd like to think. And this is the process that helps them do that and tracks whether they did it or not is the other important part. I think that's great. Okay, so that's what Team Foundation Server is. So the people who raised your hands the first time and the people who raised your hands the second time, maybe you could get together. As you can tell, there's lots to Team Foundation Server. But what we want to do is now get started on the rest of it. I'm going to hand the thingy over to Aaron, and he'll talk about process.
Great. So the first thing we want to kind of jump into today is process templates. And this is sort of a fundamental piece of Team Foundation Server. And so I want to walk you through what a process template is. So when we talk about a process template, I like to think of it as a template. That's what it is. Every time you create a new team project in Team Foundation Server, you choose a process template, and then the process is defined from that template. So a process template is made up of many different things, including work items. So these would be like a user story, a task, a bug, something like that that helps define your process. And what's included with the work items is not only the work item itself, but it's the definition, the fields that are included in that work item, as well as the layout of the forms and things like that. So when you create a process template, you're able to create as many or few work items as you want and sort of define the process for each of those work items. In addition, we have links. Links are defined in a process template. And Greg's going to jump into linking in depth. We're going to jump into that in the next section. But you're able to define relationships between work items and name those relationships and then do some really cool things with those relationships, with those links between work items. So you define those in your process template. The next piece would be queries. When you create these work items, TFS provides you with an engine to write queries and go get the work item data back. But when you create a process template, you want to define a set of queries that you ship with each of the new projects. So every time you get a project, you want that new project to have a set of standard queries that support support that process that you've defined. So these are, for example, in our Agile template, I think these are the beta 1 list of queries that are included in our Agile template. You might notice there's a folder up there as well called Workbook Queries. So we do support folders in TFS 2010. So if you want to spontaneously applause now, you can. That's a long time coming. But you can define queries, and those are provisioned with a process template as well. The next thing is reports. So we support a lot of different reporting capabilities in TFS, and we're going to jump into that in a little bit as well. But these are what we call our SQL Reporting Services reports. You can build reports, include them in your process template, and then they're provisioned with each new project. And then the final one is our portal settings. This is with each new team project that's created, you get a SharePoint site created with that project for collaboration and things like that. We've done a lot of work with the portal in the 2010 release, and I want to show you some of that today. But you can define that portal to some extent in your process template. So just kind of at a high level, that's what a process template is. I wanted to show you this sort of graphic because I think it's an important piece of understanding a process template. If we were to say that we had three process templates on our server, we had a blue, a purple, and an orange, you can see that within each of these we've got definitions which include all the things that we just talked about. As we're creating new projects, we select one of those process templates, and a project is created that is a copy of that template. So we literally take the blue project, you copy that process over, and a project takes off with that one. Now, if we were to come along and change the purple template along the way, so we've got in-flight projects already running on our Team Foundation server, we go ahead and change our purple template. When we create a new project with that purple template, it takes on the new definition of the process template. In-flight projects are left as is, so they are not changed. And that's something we'll talk about when we talk about extensibility points in a little while. But the idea is that it really is a template. It's used at project creation, and then it's disconnected from the project after that. So what are the templates that we ship in the box? So we have a long-standing tradition here of shipping two templates in the box. They are MSF for Agile template and our MSF for CMMI template. They're very different if you took a look at the two. There are some similarities, though. We look at the Agile template as a relatively lightweight template. It's relatively flat when you compare it to CMMI, and flat implies hierarchy, so Greg's going to touch on that in a little while. That's a new feature in 2010. You'll notice that we put stretch to fit in here, and this is that we are striving to create a template that can be used by teams who are implementing Agile methods, Scrum, XP, but we're not going to try to satisfy everybody. So we go with putting in what we think you need to be successful with the idea that people are going to add to that as needed. So that's kind of the stretch to fit approach. And then we have our other template, which is called MSF for CMMI. Can anybody know what CMMI stands for? What, say it a little bit louder.
The Capability Maturity Model Integrated.
Yeah, there you go. So Capability Maturity Model Integrated. It's not a very well-known term, but everybody sort of knows what CMMI is. But in our CMMI template, we have a much deeper hierarchy. Again, we'll talk about that in a little bit as we dive in. We do apply the same stretch-to-fit approach, so not everything is in there, but hopefully what is needed to be successful for a team who is trying to satisfy a CMMI appraisal of some sort. And then when you compare the two, again, the Agile template is targeting teams who are implementing Agile methods. That sort of makes sense. For CMMI, it's really targeted at teams who are interested in what we call deep traceability and auditability. And as we jump into the links, we'll be able to look at how you can leverage links to get that traceability and auditability. So any questions about the two templates? Yeah?
Do you have any idea which one's used more in the real world?
It's a great question. So the question is, which one of the two templates is used more? I don't know that I have any data. I think the Agile template is by far probably the most popular, just from my experience in talking to people. But I don't have any concrete like numbers to back that up with me. But yeah, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Any specific approach for Scrum and this MSF for Agile?
Yeah. What the question is?
There are no things for Scrum on the template for Agile?
Yeah, there are things for Scrum teams, specifically for Scrum teams in the new Agile 5.0 template. So that's a great question, actually, in terms of what we've done to these templates between the 2008 release and the 2010 release. To put it sort of at a high level, we've made a relatively large investment in the Agile template. If you are a Scrum team or a team practicing XP or something, I think the Agile template will be much more recognizable to you in the 2010 release. We've introduced like a user story work item in replacement of the scenario work item. We have burn down charts right out of the box, so things like that. So our goal here with this template is for Scrum teams especially, we want them to be successful right out of the box with this Agile template. So there's been a fairly heavy investment made on that side. In terms of the CMMI template, the changes haven't been as radical. We've implemented hierarchy, and we've done some usability improvements and things like that. But the basic structure of the template in terms of work items and whatnot is relatively similar to what was in the 2008 product. Any other questions? And it's kind of a great, we want this to be interactive, so if you have questions, feel free to jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
So the Visual Studio doesn't report back when you use a template to Microsoft saying...
Yes. Yes, you've uncovered a hole in us. Yeah, we don't have that that level of reporting back, so no. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Or?
No, yeah. We kind of laugh at ourselves always that it's not there, but so no, it's not. Okay, so with each of these sections, we're going to have an opportunity slide, and this is where we want to present some ideas for how we think the specific topic is extensible for partners. So that's why you guys are here. And we want to talk about that. So obviously, with a process template, I think there's a lot of different opportunities. I'm going to throw up here some as well, but I'd encourage others to kind of chime in for the benefit of all if you have opportunities that you think are relevant. So the first opportunity, I think, is new templates. Again, we ship two templates in the box. That is certainly not designed to cover everyone. And TFS is a platform, and this is a great way that you can extend that to platform by building templates. We have some very strong partnerships. Many of you are probably familiar with Conchango or EMC, who built a Scrum template specific for Scrum teams. There's other examples of that where companies have gone out and built specific templates. Some ones that I've thrown up here that I think might be interesting is we hear a lot of talk about lean now when we're talking about process. And I think there's a real opportunity for somebody to sort of tackle that problem in terms of a process template and build a template that's really targeted at a team that's looking to implement lean methods. So that's one example. Another example is a very simple template. And I've put under here Visual Source Safe Migration. In the 2010 release, there's a version of the product called Team Foundation Server Basic. Is that the name? And it's essentially sort of low-end offering, which includes source and work item tracking and whatnot. But we don't have a specific template for that is a default in that offering. But we know that we're going to have a lot of customers who are migrating from Visual Source Safe and will be using TFS and will be interested in a very simple template. So there's opportunities there as well. I'm sure others could come up with other new template opportunities, but templates are a great extensibility point. The next piece is componentization. Right now, templates are essentially you get everything that's included in the template, and there's no componentization in terms of sharing pieces. So it's something we've talked about, certainly on our backlog, but I think that there's an opportunity here for somebody to tackle that problem and maybe implement some sort of componentization in terms of building pieces of a template and then some sort of way to put those pieces together before project creation time.
So an example that we have heard of people is we have Agile, but we want to add a change request process to it. So can we just take just change request process and merge it into an Agile template? Please make that easy for us. We don't make it easy for you, for our customers today. And that's an example of what componentization would be. So
the other one, the next on the list here is migration tools. So as we kind of looked at earlier, when you change your process mid-flight, there's no tooling in the box that allows you to go out and migrate an in-flight project to that new template. We hear this a lot from customers, and I think there's a great opportunity to do some work in this space to allow for easy migration between templates. And then the final one, process management. So, Greg, do you want to talk about process management?
Sure. I think it'd be, could you go back two slides? This will help me tell the story. So he talked about the situation where, like, if you change this process template, right, it doesn't fix the in-flight projects. Okay, we get a lot of feedback from customers that say, hey, I want to manage the process of my enterprise, and I want to do it through my process template. I want to say, hey, I'm going to add a new required field, I'm going to add a new report or something like that, and I would like a way to push that out to my in-flight projects. So imagine an opportunity where you could come in with some tooling in the middle here that would say, okay, I detected that you've modified this template. I detect that there are two process projects up there that are out of compliance, and provide you with tooling to bring those in-flight projects into compliance with the enterprise process. So that's the best way I can explain that. And we called that process management on the slide, but what we really mean is something like that. And there's the larger the orgs get, the more they want something like this. Does that make sense? Okay. All right.
Great. Thanks, Greg. So any more questions about process templates? We're going to move on to work item linking and dive into that deeply. But before we do, I just want to present an opportunity for anybody to ask questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Just about with the new MSF Agile 5, if you've got projects already that are in the old one,
yeah.
Is there some process for exporting and importing or getting across to the new one?
So the short answer is, as soon as somebody in this room builds it, there will be.
Repeat the question.
Yeah, so the question was in terms of the MSF templates. So we've got the existing in-flight project that started on like a 4.2 template, and now you want to move to the 5.0 template. So we don't have any tooling in the box that allows you to get there. You can modify your project in flight using our command line tools that we provide. And we actually posted a set of blog posts yesterday with the announcement of Beta 2. I can get you the blog post, but it talks about how you can take the steps to modify your in-flight projects, and we do provide some scripts to make that easier for you. But again, this is a classic example of where we hear from customers all day long that you want sort of the WYSIWYG experience, click, 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 you know, map these two things, this work item to this work item, and away you go. And we don't have that tooling in the box today. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it still the old process template editor then?
No, we are revving the process template editor for the 2010 release. When I say revving it, we're updating it to work with 2010, and it'll support things like linking and stuff like that. It's not radically different, but yeah, it has been, or it is being updated. We do have a release that we'll be publishing of that soon that sort of maps with Beta 2, and then at RTM will be the full-blown release for the process template editor. So the process template editor, for those who don't know, is a power tool. And it's designed to give you sort of the UI for modifying a process template, so you're not just working with XML. Yeah, go ahead.
With regard to Beta 2, how much is in there in terms of both its implementation and the system online guidance?
For the two templates?
Yeah.
Or, okay. So the question is, how much for beta 2, how much has been implemented in terms of the two templates for the implementation of them and then the guidance? So I would say the Agile template is pretty much baked in beta 2. There's any changes that we make to the Agile template will be very cosmetic or very small. The guidance, it's a great question, actually. The guidance has been, the guidance model has been changed, and our guidance is now being delivered on MSDN as a part of the UE system. So it will actually be online. So when you right-click a work item and say, show me the process guidance for this particular work item, like a bug, you go to the online guidance now. You're up there. So we have published that, and it's in draft format for Agile. The CMMI guidance, we're in sort of heavy writing right now, and contracting with our authors to get that written. The CMMI guidance won't be really fully done until RTM. Well, really both of them won't be. In terms of implementation on the CMMI side, what you see in Beta 2 is very close. We are making some changes between Beta 2 and RTM to the layout of the forms, and we're trying to do a lot of usability improvements in that time. So, I see some frowns and whatnot with guidance. I don't want to take up too much time because we've got other topics, but maybe we can talk about that after. I'll put my contact information up, and we can certainly have a conversation about that. So great, I want to pass it off to Greg, and he's going to take us through work item linking.
All right. Oops, hit the wrong button. Okay, so work item linking. So work item linking, what is it? So work item linking is a feature that we added in 2010 to implement the scenarios of traceability. The reason it exists is to help implement scenarios around traceability. So, and traceability is really is creating meaningful relationships between two artifacts so that the sum of all of that is more valuable than the individual artifacts. And I would like to answer that with an example. So let's look at this. We have our user stories, and we have the question, are they on track? It's a simple question. We get asked this a lot. So this is an example of a report that we provide in our Agile 2010 template that helps, that provides lots of great examples around traceability. So we'll take the first story, which says, as a customer, I want to order a meal, and that's traced to work. So the work, here we see that we have 80% of the work done. We have roughly 34 hours left to complete. That gives us an aspect of the status of that user story. It's also traced to test cases and their results. So here we say we have 23 test cases that have been created to test this user story. And then of those test cases, 55% of them have not even been run yet. 33% have been run and failed, and a very small percentage have actually completed. That gives us an idea. That's a trace relationship between the user story and the test. And then another aspect of quality is the bugs that are being generated out of it. Here we see that we have three bugs, two of which are active still and one resolved. So this report here provides you an example of how the trace relationships between these things is more valuable than if you just had individual test cases or individual. Test cases are not valuable in and of themselves unless you know what they're testing. And that's what traceability is. What I'd like to do is show you a demo a little bit. How many of you have seen the 2010 linking functionality that we've implemented? How many of you played with it? Okay. So what I'm going to do is give you an introduction into that. Can you make it wake up?
Sorry. You should have turned off the power settings here. Should probably plug it in so we don't run out of batteries.
All right. So you have to log in, too.
All right. Sorry about that.
It's okay. So, sorry, we're going to have to reconnect. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back onto the slides, and then you can get that going. Okay. All right, so we'll come back to that cool demo. All right, so let's talk about traceability around the two templates that are deployed in 2010. This is Agile 2.5. This is what it looks like. So you have a story, and the story is broken down into tasks. It's decomposed. It's tested by test cases, and bugs are related to stories. Bugs are written up against stories. All of that on the bottom is traced to code. This is what, essentially, in the small, what the traceability model looks like for Agile. The types of relationships you're looking at is story is a parent of a task, and tasks are children of stories. Bugs are related to stories. You could have more than one. You could have a bug related to more than one user story, for example. And there is a tested by relationship between the test cases and the user stories. So a user story is tested by a test case. A test case tests a user story. That's the relationship. Change sets, which is already in the 2008 product, is how you link between bugs and tasks down to the code. And then code coverage data brings the relationship between tests all the way down to the code as well. So this, in the small, is what our traceability model looks like. And we build reports around this traceability model. We also believe that this model fits most of what customers do. So we've farmed this model around to a lot of customers. They call things a little bit differently, but they tend to do this same kind of thing. CMMI, the difference is we will replace user story with something called requirement, because that's what CMMI likes to call things. And we add the idea of a predecessor-successor relationship between tasks, where tasks can be dependent on each other. And then we add the idea of a change request, where a change request can affect requirements, and requirements are affected by change requests. So that's roughly what our information, traceability models are in the two templates we provide. Now, this isn't everything. We also have things like issues and risks, which can be related to just about anything on the graph. But this is roughly how we look at the world and how we build our reports, and questions and answers are brought from that. So the different types of links. So on the top here, these are work item links. These are links that link between two work items. And on the bottom, we call them artifact links. That is, links where a work item links to something outside the work item tracking system. A change set, a versioned item, a hyperlink. Those are all examples of what we call artifact links. The main difference to you is that work item links, we provide richer functionality around extensibility. And we also allow you to do things like querying across links in work item links. Artifact links, not so much. Not yet. We have a goal that eventually you can query across all these links seamlessly. So this presentation is all about work item links. That's what we talk about. That's the main functionality we added. All right. So I'm going to go through these two slides, and I'll go to the demo. There are link types that are there as core link types. They're part of the system. When you install TFS, they're on the box. They are the parent-child, the predecessor-successor, and related. They all three exist. The other link types need to be provisioned. And you can provision them via the process template, like Aaron pointed out earlier, or through tooling, which I'll give you a demo of later on of how to add links. So they're provisioned. And you can provision any number of link types for your traceability model. So let me, I want to go over to yours. Okay. So what I want to do is I want to show you a little bit of the linking functionality to let you know what that looks like. So we'll do this. We're going to add a query. Okay, so you're familiar with the query editor. If you're familiar with TFS, it's pretty simple. We say we want to do something like user stories, and we want to run. Then you'll see here below, you'll see the list of user stories pop up. There we go. And then we can filter down to active user stories if we want and get something like that. Okay, so this all existed in 2008. What you can do now in 2010 is query across this relationship. So you can create a new link query called work items and their direct links. This provides you to filter on the work items on the other side of the relationship. And I'll go through these options in a moment. So let's just run this query and see what it looks like. Now what you see is this user story down here is linked to several items. It's linked to several tasks with the child relationship. We're linked to a couple of bugs with the related relationship. That's now you can start doing that kind of stuff. Now let's say, hey, I want to just show me my bugs. So I can do that. Now I'm seeing the user stories as they're linked to bugs. I see that relationship right in the query. If I wanted to say, hey, I only want to see items, user stories that have bugs, forget the user stories that don't have bugs, I can select this option, hit run, and now I see only the user stories that have bugs. Now let's say I want to do something like show me only the user stories that have P1 bugs associated with it. Then I can create a query that does that. And let's say one of the people on my team, let's say Aaron here, is out, sick or something like that, I can find out P1 bugs assigned to Eric associated with my user stories. So I can start to dig into this information and I can find out user stories that are interesting to me based on how they're related to another work item. Any questions about what I just did? All right? Cool. I think so too. Another thing you can do is we can change this to be, let's cut this down, let's say test cases. So we can run this, and now I'm seeing, here are the user stories that are linked to test cases. Only user stories linked to test cases. But what's also interesting is show me all the user stories that are not linked to test cases. And then I've done that. Now I can start filling in my traceability relationships. I can go here and I can open this user story up. I can go to my test cases tab, click on the link to. You'll see that I'm just going to click on that. I can browse and I can find. Oh, let's find open test cases. Find them. Select a couple. Now you'll see here, like what we're seeing, we show graphically what you are, that this is you, this is the current work item, and these are the relationships you just created. And tested, these are tested by these test cases. I'll hit say save, go back to here. Now you'll notice here, this is work item number 9. If I run it again, work item number 9 falls off the list, and I can work on to the next one, start filling in my trace relationships, okay? So that's one part of it. The other thing we can do is we have this concept of a tree query. A tree query works on tree-type links, parent-child-type links, and we recurse all the way down to the very end of the tree. The query that I had before gives you one-hop relationships. We call it a one-hop query. It gives you the work items you queried on plus one hop away. The tree query will recurse all the way down. So I can go here, and I can say, give me all the child tasks of user stories, and I get something that looks like this. Now what I can do now is I can actually edit the tree in the query results. I can take this thing and I can drag it under here, and that has become a child of that other task. And then I can take this and I can drag it under here, and I've just created another relationship. And then I can save it, and now I just have, I've just modified my tree. The other thing I'm not going to show you is you can actually take this query and send it to Excel and edit the tree in Excel. We actually simulate the tree in Excel. You can edit it. It's all cool. You can send it to Project, and that's cool. And what's really cool is we also round-trip the predecessor successor links you create in Project back to TFS as well. So all that stuff has been built in, and we like it very much. All right. So that's the thing there. So now I'm going to go back to this. And now I'm going to talk about, now in the traceability models I showed you right here, I tell you, we are taking a best guess of what most customers will use, but we realize, kind of like the stretch to fit model, it will not meet everybody's needs. So people will need to customize their own traceability model. So I'm going to go through what that is. So there are link topologies, we call them. I would like to say they are types of link types. That's the best way I can say it. A link type would be parent-child. That is of a particular topology. I'm going to go through four topologies of when, if you want to create your own link type, you can choose from these four. The first one is network. Second one is directed network. Then dependency and tree. And I'm going to go through these all in more detail. The network one is a link of no rules, no constraints, and no directionality. In 2008, this was the link type you had. The work item link type was a related link. In fact, when you upgrade, all 2008 links are upgraded to the related link type in 2010. It's a network link, we call it. So in our model, bugs are related to stories, as we use that type of a link type to that. And you could also relate stories to stories. Stories could have some sort of a relationship, kind of a see also relationship to other stories. That's the network. Directed network is like network, except for there's arrows. There's directionality. One points at another. So here's an example. Let's say we wanted to augment our traceability model that we deployed in Agile to say we wanted to add a high-level dependency between stories. So here we could say a story can require another story, and a story can be required by another story. Here's an example. Story A requires story B, which requires story C, which can turn around and require story A. This allows me to point out that in this topology, we allow circular relationships. in that. And then, of course, story B then is required by story A. So the meaning of the depending on which side of the link you're on to determines how you participate in that relationship. Yes?
What's an example of a story requiring another story?
Well, so I would, so it's a good question. What's an example of a story requiring another story? I would say that my example of here is kind of weak. I'd say where it's more interesting is if you had these work items that trace to high-level features. There were large features, and the granularity of those features was so large that you just want to track, and teams own each feature, right? And you want to track dependencies on other features at a high level. That's where it'd be. Stories tend to be smaller, and you don't have this as much. But if you had high-level features, you could use this. Does that answer your question? Okay. All right, dependency is just like the directed link, directed network, except for we don't allow circular relationships. So we have rules to prevent that. So the test tested by relationship is a dependency, and the more classic example would be the predecessor-successor relationship is also a dependency. We don't allow circular relationships. So you look here and you say task A is dependent on these two tasks. Task C is dependent on task A, which is also predecessor to task B. What we don't allow is for you to create a relationship back this way again. The server will actually stop you. If you try to save that predecessor-successor relationship, it will not let you do it. It's enforced at the server. So that's what a dependency is. And then the last one is a tree. And this is a one-to-many relationship. So a parent can have many children, and a child can have only one and only one parent. So the example here, of course, is story. Stories can have more than one task. Tasks can have one and only one story associated with them. And then, of course, tasks can be broken down into subtasks. As you saw me do in the query, I just dragged and dropped and created a task to be a subtask. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how you would modify your traceability model through some tooling that we have. Okay, so the first thing I want to point out is if you've worked with any of our tools before, like WIT import, WIT export, GL import, GL export, all WIT fields, if any of those things ring a bell to you, this will be interesting. All those commands have been replaced by a single command called WIT admin, which has it all together in one place. Okay, and these are all the things that WIT admin will do for you. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I have batch files because typing these command lines is murderous. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, here's a command where I'm listing all my link types. And you'll see here, these are all the link types that exist in this particular Team Foundation server instance right here. You can see that we have tested by, we can have the dependency. Here's the topology dependency, and it's creating the predecessor successor right there. Related is of the topology network, for example. And I won't get into this, but you can actually deactivate link types. You can say, I'm going to turn them off. You can't use them anymore if you want. Okay? All right. So what you do here is I'm going to export. There's an export link type command where you can export something to an XML file. And then I'm going to edit that file. Can everyone see that? Let's do this. It's just a font dialog. Here we go. All right, so this will allow me to show you the different parts of it. So here every link type gets a reference name, just like fields. So you define a reference name that's unique and immutable. This is the ID that will never change. Then you define the forward name and the reverse name. This is the name of each side of the link. So depending on what side, it will describe their link relationship from that. And then this is how you how you define the topology. So if we wanted to do something like, hey, I want to create a link relationship about user story dependencies, so we can say story dependency, and we'll say call this right here my company. Okay, so I'm going to bring that up, and then I'm going to import that link type, DI DIL. Oh, I didn't save it first. Now, if I refresh it, and let's say we're going to open up a new story. So now what I can do is I can say, hey, that link type is now there. Here's the requires, required by. I can now create link relationships with that type. That's all I had to do. I've just now created a new link type, and I can relate things to that. But the thing is like if you want this really cool, if you want this cool tab, how much time do we, how are we doing, Aaron?
Okay. Yep, we're good.
All right. So I want to create a tab that does that. So what we've done with the links controller, we've allowed you to filter the links control to only work with certain types of links. So you can say, I want to create a tab that only deals with my requirements between user stories. So let's look at that. So we'll export our user story. If you guys have worked, how many have worked in this XML before? All right, so I'm sorry. That's all I'm going to say about that. And that's where the process template editor comes in. So you'll see here that here's this tab. If you'll see this tab, this has a tab called Story Dependencies. Here's the links control. The links control now has these additional elements associated with it. This particular element right here. This particular element right here allows you to filter what types of links are going to be in here. So let's go down to this one. And what I've done is I've created a filter so it only works with the link type that I just created. So if you're on that control, it will only allow you to view and add link types of that. You can also filter it down to even what work item type. So you can say, hey, I only want a link to user stories, other user stories from this links control. And then you can define what fields are going to be in there as well. So you can add more columns. This is a new functionality in links control, is you can have many more columns as well. So I'll save this, and I will import it.
You'd see these tabs in our current templates that we're shipping as well. Like for CMMI, you have a requirement, and then there's a change request tab, which filters only for change requests which are affected by that requirement or affecting that requirement. So we've implemented this control in a variety of ways in our templates that we ship.
I was importing this to Agile 3. There we go. So here we go. So this is what I have. I've just added this tab. If I click on link to, it's only going to allow me to select this link type. It won't allow me to select anything else. If I browse, and say I select something like, let's select something like all my work items. You'll see right here, because I put the filter, you cannot link to anything but a user story. These, which are bugs, I can't select them. There's no way to select them. But I can select another user story. So it allows me to create that relationship and do those kind of constraints. So I'm going to just stop and say, are there any questions about what I just showed you? Thoughts? Comments? Good? All right. Okay. Then I'll just turn the thing back to you. Let's go back to this.
Do you want to talk about the opportunities first?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Right. Sorry. Cool. Okay. So there are these set of opportunities. So like I like to look at these are the things that were below our cut line. Like we would have really liked to have done these things, but we couldn't. So obviously you have all these relationships between work items. It'd be great to visualize them. You'll see in our product, we don't provide very nice ways to visualize them. It's just flat, right, and hierarchy. You could think of all kinds of wonderful ways to visualize relationships between user stories and dependencies or tasks or bugs or whatever. The sky's the limits there. And people have been asking for that. I will tell you, every demo that we do of this stuff, they love it, and then they say, I would love to see it more visual. That is the very next thing they ask for. So. Another one is You take the relationship of task to user story. It's a parent-child relationship. I believe that selecting the user story associated with this task or this bug should be as simple as selecting a field. Right now, you have to go to the links control, press link 2, go find the work item, find it, click, you got your relationship. It would be cool if there was a custom control of some sort that made it as easy as selecting a field. And people would love it. Like, that's the, one of the things we would have loved to have been able to do in this release, but we couldn't. So there's an opportunity. What we have, whenever I bring up this, present this story about the new linking and everything's wonderful, and the first thing people say is, but what do I do now? I have all these in-flight projects that are 2008, and I have these relationships between user story and tasks that's just related, and I want it to be parent-child in the new system. Are you going to give me any tools that help me convert the links from the old to the new? And I say, no, not yet. So, but it's something that people are really, really looking for and how to do that. And then the other one, the last one is for me to tell you of another thing that was below our cut line, which we call link constraints. So our model nicely says a user story is a parent of a task. We have nothing in the system that will keep you from creating a task to be a parent of a user story or a bug to be a parent of a task, or you can create any relationship you want. So that's the way it is. There could be tooling around that helps people define constraints around the links, and then help to enforce them through possibly eventing. You could event and say, hey, you know, you've just created a relationship that's not good, sending them an email, some sort of report, exception reporting, something like that. Those are the things that we would have loved to have done, but we couldn't get to. Okay, yes?
For Visual Studio extensions, you can go to Vid, you can actually upload your additions, if you will, to their Visual Studio gallery.
So the question is, can people take advantage of the Visual Studio Gallery to implement some of these cool things? I don't know if I know enough to answer the question. I don't know.
I can say that we're looking at putting together a program for like process template certification. So if you were going to build a new process template, you could have it certified by Microsoft, and then it's up on the site and where people can find it and things like that. I think what you're talking about is a piece of that. And I think it would be related to that conversation. I don't know that we have anything now, but I know when we find partners who are doing great things, I mean, certainly contact us, and we can work with the right people to get it, you know, up on MSDN in the right place so that people can find it, things like that.
Yeah. So my contact information is at the end of it. All both ours. If you shoot us an email or let us know, then I'll look it up for you. Yeah.
This sort of advanced linking, all of that is configurable in either Project or Excel? So can I link stories to tasks and all that sort of thing in either of those tools?
So that's a good question. So I'm going to translate the question. What link relationships can I edit in Project and Excel? The only ones you can edit are parent-child. That's all we could get to. So it would have been wonderful to do the one-hop relationships, like user stories to test cases, and edit that. Those aren't parent-child, and you cannot edit those in Excel. You can only edit trees.
What are those?
I'm sorry?
What's test case one? What relationship is that?
That was a test tested by. It was of the topology of dependency. Only link types of the topology tree can be edited in Excel and in Project. That's a great question. Any other questions?
With the process model design and enforcement opportunity that you have up there, I mean, is there been any changes to the eventing model on the server with when you check in, but when you save a work item type, how does that event get generated? It's all web service based, but I mean, has there been any new additions to the SDK on that, the API, documentation around that? It was in 2008. It was fairly limited as far as what was documented, what you kind of had to go figure out on your own.
I'm sorry to say that there has not been much changes.
Okay.
Yeah. So not to there's been some changes to support some enterprise aspects of eventing, but not anything to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead.
All right, well, I think we got about 10 minutes left, so I'm going to whip through the reports and dashboards piece here so we can get to our demo of this because I want to show it to you. So real quick, how does it work? We take all this work item data. It gets pumped into SQL. We build a warehouse and a cube out of it, and then you can build all these great reports. So that is the pot of gold that people want at the end of all this. In 2008, we had a lot, everybody was excited about reaching that pot of gold. Everybody knew it was there. The problem was there was a fairly big mountain in the middle. And in many cases, there was a big hairy guy like an abominable snowman sitting on that mountain trying to prevent you, and you might know him as MDX. So if any of you are experienced report writers, come talk to me later. I might have a few reports you could debug for me later. But writing reports in 2008 was a difficult experience because SQLRS was pretty much all we offered out of the box. And while there's great value there, it's a high barrier to entry experience. So let me tell you quickly what we've done in 2010. We've still got SQL reporting services. We are shipping a ton of great reports, RDL reports, in both our templates. And we have made improvements to the cube usability, warehouse usability, so that hopefully those are a little bit easier to write. But we've also got two new features, which I want to show you today, our SharePoint dashboards, and then also Excel reports from work item queries. So I'm going to try to blow through these quickly. These are the SQL reporting services reports. If you're familiar with the 2008 reports, these are prettier. That's all I'll say about that. So, okay, in terms of SharePoint dashboards, we ship two types of dashboards out of the box. So when you create a team project, you have the opportunity to create a portal or a dashboard that's associated with that project. We, again, ship two versions. We have our WSS dashboards, which is sort of standard SharePoint. So if you're familiar, like, we give you standard SharePoint with TFS. The MOS dashboards is the enterprise MOS SKU, or enterprise SharePoint SKU. So that's Microsoft Office SharePoint Server. And you can do more with MOS. So I'm going to demo MOS for you today, but quickly explaining, in both of these situations, you get what we call TFS web parts, which I'll show you. The WSS, both templates ship two dashboards. We ship you a progress dashboard, which includes a couple of basic SQL Server RDL reports. And then on the MOS side, we have a much richer experience where we give you six dashboards for each of your projects. You get Excel services charting, which I'll show you, and they're highly customizable. So I don't want to spend too much time here. We can come back to this, but I want to get you to the demo and show you guys this stuff. Okay, so this right here is an example of a MOS dashboard for a project created from the MSF for Agile 5.0 project process template. And when you're staring at this screen, you'll notice you're seeing some new visuals. These visuals, these are charts that were created in Excel and then published with Excel services back to the SharePoint site for broad consumption. We've also got some other things on here. You'll notice there's something called project work items over here. These are the TFS web parts, which I highlighted earlier. These are web parts that our web access team has written specifically for SharePoint, and you can add these to your portal and customize them and configure them to show whatever you want. So for example, down here, I've got a query results web part, which is showing open issues. This is completely interactive. I can double-click one of the issues. I can modify it. I can reassign it. Let's give it to Greg since he's here. I can save and close. And then when I refresh this, we'll see that it changes. So you're able to interact with work items right from your SharePoint site while you're interacting with these visuals as well. We've also got some web parts over here that show check-in data, build data. There's a whole variety of these. Just to show you quickly, if I were to edit the page, this is all standard SharePoint, so there's no sort of tricks here. You can drag and drop, rearrange all this stuff however you'd like. And if you were to add a new web part, you would get a dialog here. Down at the bottom, you'll see a set of Visual Studio Team System web parts. So these are the web parts that I was talking about, which allow you to interact with work items, check-ins, builds, and things like that right from your SharePoint dashboard. I don't want to spend too much time on that. What I really want to show you is how this charting piece works. So I'm going to just quickly kind of browse through the dashboards to give you an idea of what you can see. This is our quality dashboard. We've got test data, build data, bug metrics, code churn, code cov. We've also got a bugs dashboard. This one is going to give you some richer information about bugs and then maybe a list of bugs down at the bottom. But let's say the experience is that I want to change one of these charts, right? This is the common experience. Most customers tell us that to change one of the out-of-the-box RDL reports, it's a minimum two-week effort, And that's if they can find somebody who knows MDX, understands reporting services. So I'm going to show you how easy this is if you've got Moss and you're using Excel services. So I'm going to just click the title of this particular chart. You'll notice there's four people being shown on it. I'm going to say open in Excel. And at this point, we just let Excel take over. We're going to enable our data connection here. And what you're seeing is that we've got a pivot table here, and it's bound to our cube. And here's the cube over here, so I don't want to spend too much time talking to that. But I can easily interact with this pivot table and customize it. So right now, we're showing all the active bugs for iteration 3. Maybe we wanted to show active bugs for the entire project. And then maybe we want to filter out and only show P1 and P2 bugs. So we could change our report to look like that. Now, at this point, I can use Excel services to just save this Excel report back to the dashboard, reload it, and it'll be live. So I'm just going to do that. I'm going to say Save As. I'm going to navigate to that SharePoint site. Here it is, Active Bugs by Assignment. I replace it. I flip back over to my SharePoint site where we were before. I'm going to reload the workbook to clear the cache, because Excel Services does some caching. You'll notice that the chart has changed. When I head back to my dashboard, presto, the chart has, or the report has been updated. It's been published back to the dashboard. And I was able to do that in 2 minutes here in a demo. Now, this is an experience that we know project managers, all your customers out there that love Excel, this is an experience that they're going to love. Now, with Excel here, you can't do everything that you could do with RDL. You can't bring in a report that pulls, you know, code metrics with bugs, with user stories, and pull them all into a single report. That's a much more advanced experience, and reporting services still fills that space very well. But what you can do, when you combine SharePoint with Excel, you can bring all that data together on a single dashboard. So here you can see I've got 6 charts, and they're all pulling data from different places in the product in TFS, but I've combined them into a single dashboard. And it's important for me to point out, these are live reports. So what Excel Services allows you to configure this to the refresh interval, essentially, how often you want to go back. It utilizes caching as well. But as data changes on the back end, it's going to be fed into these charts and updated here. So now I want to take this a step further, which is now I want to show you how easy it is to start from a work item query. And you can actually start from here and get to that dashboard in just a few clicks. So you might be familiar. Well, Greg showed you all the querying options. Let me just pull up my active bugs query. We're going to show you that it's got stack rank, priority, sev, assigned to, and I've got 30 items in this one. I'm going to simply right-click that query. I'm going to say create report in Microsoft Excel. Excel launches. What's going to happen here is we translate that work item query. We look for all the columns that you pulled in. Here we are, stack rank, pri, sev, and assigned to. Let's create a work item count report by priority, and then maybe a trend report by assigned to. We'll click finish. Maximize this so you guys can see it. Maybe make it a little bit bigger. We'll give you a nice little table of contents page. We've actually now gone and hooked up the data connection for you, bound the pivot table to the cube, and created visuals off of what you chose in that initial dialog. Here's that current work item recount by priority, and here's that trend report by assigned to. So you can see now we've taken an experience which was before was really hard to get to, really hard to modify, and we've drastically simplified it. Excel is everybody's friend, and we're trying to leverage that in the 2010 release. Now at this point, I'm going to have to do this fast because I've got 2 minutes here, but I can take one of these reports, and I'm just going to say publish Excel services. I'm going to navigate back to my reports library. I'm going to choose the Excel services options. And I'm only going to do one of these charts. Don't worry about the names. That's being fixed. So I'll just call it book one, just for fun. Okay, so we've published that particular visual. Now I can go back to my dashboard. And actually, let me just switch to my other machine just so I can show you. I'm going to just take one of these reports, I don't know, test plan progress, just for fun. Oops, sorry, I clicked the wrong thing. I'm going to modify it, modify the actual web part here, and I'm just going to point to a different workbook. What do we call it? Book one? There it is. Now, I didn't do much sizing there to make it better. But I started in Team Explorer. With a matter of clicks, I created an Excel report. And then with a few more clicks, I was able to publish that to my dashboard. So again, really, really great experience here. So I'm going to switch back, and we're going to wrap this up because we're running out of time. And I know you've got more presentations to go to. Opportunities here. Obviously, there's a ton of opportunities with SQL reporting services and what we call report packs. We ship the tip of the iceberg. So we ship reports, but there is a huge market out there for people that are looking for people to build more reports, either for the out-of-the-box templates or for all other kind of scenarios. Some opportunities that we see opportunities to build reports specifically designed for stakeholders, cross-collection reports or cross-team project collection reports. And then maybe a set of reports that look at operations and how your TFS server is performing. And then a whole set of SharePoint web parts that could be built. Again, we ship you web parts which are very similar to Team Explorer, querying, going to work items, things like that. We can see very specific web parts being written for specific methodologies, sprint burndown, branch visualization, sprint progress, even work item like link visualization. This is like what Greg was showing you. There's no web parts or anything to display those relationships or visualize those relationships on your SharePoint dashboard. You can do all the indenting and whatnot for tree queries, but there's no things there. Custom adapters, I don't even want to go there because we don't have time. So questions, we're going to skip it. There's our contact information. We're out of time, but thanks, you guys. It's been great, and I hope you guys can find ways to extend Team Foundation Server. Feel free to